You are listening to WSIU. I'm Jennifer Fuller, and this is In Focus. Southern Illinois University's School of Law presents its Beatty Jurist in Residence. In residence this week, as a matter of fact, with a lecture at 5 o'clock this evening. It's at the SIU Law School Auditorium, again at 5 p.m. Our Jurist in Residence is Judge Ki Dinyake, who has expertise in both Botswana and Papua New Guinea. Thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
And the host for the Beatty Lecture is SIU Law Professor Chris Bean. Thank you for coming in as well.
Thank you, Jennifer.
So the topic for the lecture and some of the things that, Judge, you'll be talking with students about is the appointment of judges and its threat to judicial independence. It's very timely, particularly here in the United States. I know lots of people are very concerned about the nomination process, the appointment process, and what effect it has on democracy in general. Have you been watching what's happening in the United States, and how do we compare this to what's happening where you are?
Yes, certainly. I have been watching the debates around the appointment of judges or selection of judges here. It offers an interesting comparator. Because the debate all over the world now is about the best model of appointing judges. So every country has its own model. There is no model that we can say is the model. From the part of the world where I come from, the appointment of judges is entrusted to a body, a constitutional body in Botswana called the Judicial Services Commission. And this body recommends to the president, who is the appointing authority. But the law is very clear that the president must act in accordance with the recommendations of the Judicial Service Commission. So that is the position in Botswana on appointment of judges. This is save for the Chief Justice, who is appointed directly by the president without the need to receive any recommendations from the Judicial Service Commission, and also with respect to the president of the Court of Appeal.
Chris, without getting too much into the weeds, when you talk about the appointment of judges, that's in the U.S. Constitution. The way that it's written, it's not something that could be easily changed, but the founding fathers thought that this was the right way to do it.
We have a separation of powers that's built into our Constitution, and the president appoints federal judges with the advice and consent of the Senate. And that, of course, is where we see a lot of the controversy, especially when it comes to the appointment of Supreme Court justices. So their system is a bit different. As I understand it, the president actually also appoints the members of the Judicial Service Commission. Isn't that correct?
Yes, that is correct. The president appoints the members of the Judicial Service Commission. The Attorney General is a member. It's appointed by the president. The permanent secretary to the president is appointed by the president. And the judge, president of the Court of Appeal, is a member of the Judicial Service Commission, is also appointed by the president, and the chairperson of the Public Service Commission is also appointed by the president. So you understand there is an issue as to whether it is too heavily biased in favor of executive appointees.
Which is the criticism in the United States as well, whether it's biased toward whoever is holding that high office. Do you find that there is enough independence within the court system?
The court system, yes, Botswana is renowned for its independence. The judges are independent. There's not been a complaint about the decisional independence of judges, that they do act in accordance with anyone's instruction, let alone the executive. The judiciary as an institution is also independent and renowned for its independence. The issues that we're grappling with around the independence of the judiciary relates to financial autonomy, and we're trying to get the best financing model for the judiciary that ensures that the executive does not use the purse control the judiciary.
Via bribes or in other ways? Can you be more specific?
The purse in terms of allocating resources to the judiciary, in terms of all the resources that the judiciary needs to function. In other countries, it is known that where the executive controls the purse and there is no financial autonomy, they can use it to either punish the courts for the decision they don't like, or they can simply starve the judiciary so that it is discredited in the eyes of the public.
And you can hear more about these comparisons again at 5 o'clock at the SIU Law School Auditorium. It's the Beatty Jurist in Residence Lecture, which goes on through the SIU School of Law. A little less than a minute remaining, Chris. What should Americans draw from comparisons such as this?
Well, I think that an important lesson for us to draw is that we have some structural independence built into our system, particularly our federal system, that doesn't exist in some other countries. And what the justice said about the potential power of the purse being wielded to influence the judiciary is a very real danger in other places throughout the world. I'm intrigued that he'll be talking to us about a number of different countries that he's familiar with. So we'll hear about Botswana, Swaziland, South Africa, and Kenya. And I think that each of these countries has its own differences from the others. And I think this will be a rich comparison for us to take a look at our own system and see where we might look for improvements and also see where we have some strengths.
You can find more information at law.siu.edu. I want to thank you both for coming in.
Thank you very
much. Thank you, Jennifer.
Much appreciated.
This is WSIU In Focus. I'm Jennifer Fuller.